What's up? Nick Loper here. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, because if you don't dedicate part of your week to generating time-leveraged income, it's not like that's just going to magically happen for you one day. Today's guest is one of my favorite examples of someone who's done just that, starting out repairing motorcycles on the side in his garage, but turning that hours for dollars side hustle into something with a lot more scale. Back for his third round on the Side Hustle Show, Matt Boknock from howtomotorcyclerepair.com. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Nick, how you doing? Thanks for having me back a third time. That's awesome.
It's pretty rare air at this point. You're one of the very few. As memory serves, I'm going back to when we first recorded 2016, you described turning wrenches, basically fixing bikes in the garage, and that was accounting for about half the income, but the other half was coming from digital product sales or kind of video downloads of like, I've recorded myself, you know, doing these full engine rebuilds and you can buy them over here through Gumroad. The business at that time, if I recall, was doing around $1,000 a month. If we fast forward to our most recent recording in 2019, the business had grown 4 or 5X. All of a sudden, the hours for dollars, the turning wrenches time was basically down to essentially zero. The money at that time was coming from a combination of digital product sales, YouTube ad income, affiliate commissions from the YouTube videos, like, hey, here's the product that I'm using. Let me link out to that. You had some community support, some Patreon support. You had some sponsored content relationships. You had a really diversified income stream. But now we fast forward again to 2022. It looks like that revenue has taken another 4 or 5X jump. And just catch us up. What's been going on since we left off?
Yeah, so I don't actually do any service work anymore, and I actually shut that site down that generates leads. So that's completely out of the picture now, for one. And then I just kept marching forward with producing content on YouTube to hopefully generate more YouTube ad revenue.
And we talked about this last time, where it's like, well, I was like, if you stop fixing bikes, where do you get content? And you said, well, I go out and buy like project bikes and stuff like that. Is that still the case?
Yeah. So if I need something at this point, I just go out and buy it. And then I do what I need to do to it. Usually it increases in value because now I have fixed this broken thing and then I can resell it.
Gotcha. Okay. So now the content is making you money in multiple different ways. Sure.
Yeah. And in addition, I just kept trying to create products, video tutorials that I can sell. So I kept adding to my library so that those numbers have increased. I designed my own physical product last year and I started selling that all over the world. And that has been a real nice bump in revenue for sure.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get into that. So expanding the digital product inventory, these are the, you know, makes and models of like how to, you know, step by step how to do a certain repair. That's kind of the gist of who these digital downloads are for.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're very niche. It's for a certain model, certain repair job. You know, it applies to a segment of years, you know, a generation of bike, but it's a very specific repair. For example, how to rebuild your engine or how to rebuild your carburetors on a certain model.
Okay. Can you give me a sense of the size of that library at this point? How many of these do you have?
I probably have like 30 or so digital products that I sell. Actually, I haven't really counted, but if I were to guess, about 30 or so.
Okay. And I imagine there's an 80-20 to that of like, well, these are the most popular ones that generate the bulk of the revenue. Are people finding those primarily through the YouTube channel, or is your SEO strong enough that if people search in this problem on this bike, like you automatically show up?
Yeah, so a little bit of both, but I would say YouTube is the number one lead magnet or generation for getting people to buy the product.
Okay, and these aren't necessarily like online courses, like I'm going to walk you through. It's more like, you know, here's this file, and I think you said you were streaming them from Gumroad or something in the past. Is that still the case, or what's the delivery mechanism?
Yes, I still use Gumroad today.
Okay. YouTube, I noticed, was up to 100,000 subscribers. Like, you're pretty pretty big YouTube celebrity at this point. I forget what it was previously. I figured maybe it was like 10,000 when we first recorded. So it's grown quite a bit since then, too. Talk to me a little bit about the YouTube strategy, the constant content plan that has to keep going to kind of feed this channel and this personality that you built over there?
Yeah. So thanks on the 100K. I submitted the request for my silver play button. So I'm waiting for that thing to show up any day now. But they
don't send it to you automatically?
No, you have to go through like a verification process and whatnot and order it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I don't know how long it takes. It's not here yet. So, but you know, I started in 2011, early 2012. So it's taken 10 years to grow to that 100K.
Yeah.
So not necessarily the fastest growing channel or biggest channel out there, but I mean, you know, a slow, steady growth. And I just try to post at least two videos a month, and just, I don't know, I just find stuff that's broken and I just post videos on how to fix it on the channel. I mean, it's pretty simple, actually.
How are you finding this broken stuff?
Well, friends and family show up, or I buy projects that are popular, like on forums and stuff like that, a popular model. And then usually when you get, you know, let's say a motorcycle, all the common problems need to be addressed. You know, the engine is seized or the carburetors are dirty or whatever. And that just makes for good content. I mean, that's exactly what you're going to find if you decide to buy an old bike.
Okay. When I was working at Ford, they would put out these TSBs, the technical service bulletins, on kind of common problems that would pop up. Is there anything like that in your industry where it becomes somewhat common knowledge that, yeah, this is, if you've had this car or if you've had this bike for any length of time, this is probably going to go wrong at some point. And, you know, here's how to fix it. So you create content around that.
Yeah. So there's a certain model that my friend owned, and the engine blew up on him. And it just turns out it's a very common problem or failure point on this model in year range. So I put up the video, or I decided to sell the video, and it sells really well because tons of people are having the same issue, and they find the rebuild video. It will help them. They buy it, and you know, it just works out that way. Yeah, for sure.
How do you figure out what to put behind the paywall, behind the Gumroad, you know, digital download paywall versus what's going to be free on YouTube for the sake of discovery?
Yeah, so something that is advanced will go behind the paywall. So an engine rebuild, I mean, that's usually 3-4 hours worth of video on how to do it. And once you get into, you know, the valve train of the engine, the transmission, a bunch of gears and springs and all this stuff, I mean, that's really advanced. I charge for stuff like that.
Okay. And then on the YouTube side, this is more...
Yeah, so... Yeah, on the YouTube side, you know, quick, easy tips, something that it isn't advanced, but it's still a good topic to cover. Like, for instance, what kind of oil should you run in your bike, or maybe an oil change, or changing out cables or a battery or tires, something that's pretty basic or intermediate on the skill level.
Is the audience feeding you those questions at this point?
Sometimes they do. Once we get in a little later into the physical product, that was definitely audience driven, but generally I try to come up with my own content.
That's always the challenge. And I'm grateful to have people asking me questions all day long in a way. And I apologize that I can't answer anybody or everybody individually, but it's like, this is future content. If somebody has this question, odds are other people have this. So that's potential podcast content, blog content, video content. What's the YouTube channel worth in terms of, you know, driving product sales, or an estimate of monthly, you know, AdSense video earnings, something like that, even affiliate commissions, if you have it tracked that granularly?
Yeah. So, I mean, right now, last year, I almost hit 2,000 a month average for YouTube ad revenue.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm trying to just, this gives a sense of like, okay, I've been at this for 10 years, which I appreciate you saying that. And I've got, you know, $2,000 a month from YouTube ads. So if that's your game plan, you know, good on you, but you're probably going to have to have something else to supplement that if you want to be a full-time YouTuber, or just, you know, get to 1 million subscribers and you see if it scales from there.
And if you remember back on my first episode, I was complaining that my monetization was turned off and it was canceled or whatever. So that's the time I started exploring other options. I'm like, okay, well, if YouTube's not going to give me money, well, then I got to find out somewhere else where to get it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And then that is translated into all these digital product sales and all the other revenue channels. that you have today. So YouTube drives the digital product sales. Are you comfortable sharing a sense of what those are doing on a typical month?
Yeah. So last year, let's see, a little under 4,200 a month in just video sales through Gumroad.
Okay. Yeah, that's up significantly since when we last recorded in 2019. So that's pretty exciting stuff. Is the affiliate piece of the pie still worth mentioning? Is this just kind of like bonus money that comes in from Amazon or other products stores that you recommend people check out?
Every little bit counts. I'm floating at around about 400 a month through Amazon affiliates.
Okay. It's not nothing.
Yeah, but it's something I definitely shouldn't focus on. You know, I mean, I tried it and it's like, okay, these are the numbers it generates. Okay, well, maybe I should focus elsewhere, you know, but it's something.
Anything else on the revenue side before we talk about this new invention, new physical product spinoff?
No, let's just jump right into it.
We'll do just that in just a moment. But first, let me ask you this. Are you struggling with the awareness problem? Are you struggling to get your content and your business to rank on the first page of Google? Maybe you've tried some SEO tools in the past, but they just end up making you feel more confused about what you should be doing. You need a tool that makes SEO simple and delivers results fast. The answer is our brand new sponsor, RankIQ.com. This is an AI-powered SEO toolset built just for bloggers and side hustlers like you. How it works is RankIQ's keyword experts have found the lowest competition keywords with the highest traffic potential, and they've done that in over 300 separate niches. If you create content on it, odds are they've got you covered. All you need to do is choose one of the keywords in your niche that's already a proven winner, and then click the Run Report button. That report tells you what to put in your blog post and title so you can write perfectly optimized content in half the time. Hit the pause button right now. Go on over to rankiq.com to start publishing content that goes straight to the first page of Google. And you don't have to just take my word for it. RankIQ has the highest user ratings on G2 of all SEO tools for both ease of use and quality of support. Big thanks to RankIQ for sponsoring this edition of The Side Hustle Show. All right. So I'm, you know, from the world of online business where you're like, I've got this great content machine. People pay me for digital videos. I make affiliate commissions. YouTube pays me. And then you're like, I want to throw a wrench, pun intended, into the whole thing and try and do this physical product. Now I've got to deal with logistics and manufacturing and all this other stuff that you didn't have to deal with before. But let's take it back to the beginning and talk about, you know, the idea, the inspiration to even attempt such a thing.
Sure. Yeah. And let me start off by saying, you know, I'm an engineer and I work in manufacturing environments and whatnot. I never really wanted to get into physical products. For various reasons, right? You got to deal with inventory and quality issues and all kinds of stuff. So that's why I've been focusing on digital sales and whatnot, make it totally passive. But this product made a lot of sense and it's selling really well. So let me back up to the beginning. And back in, I think, 2017, 2018, I came across a machine or a process called vapor blasting that restores parts for motorcycles, cars, you name it. And I was like, whoa, this thing's awesome. So I contacted the company for potential sponsorship and they said, yeah, sure, we'll send you a machine. I'm like, all right, great. And some time went on and no machine showed up. So I gave them a call and even visited them and they said, no, you know, we can no longer offer you this, but you can buy it for $4,000. And I'm like, no thanks, right?
So, okay.
So, for those of you that don't know what vapor blasting is, I'm sure you're familiar with what sandblasting is, correct, Nick?
Sandblasting, pressure washing, I have a sense of where we're going with this.
So sandblasting is taking dry media like sand, crushed glass, or whatever, some kind of abrasive material, and you siphon feed it to a blast gun, and then you take compressed air and you accelerate it, and you hit the part with this media and it strips off rust, paint, whatever for restoration. And then you would go and paint the part or whatever. Vapor blasting, however, uses water to carry the media into a slurry to the gun and then you blast it towards the part. And the benefits of it is you can use a finer media and there's some kind of like flushing action and it turns like aluminum looking brand spanking new. It's just amazing. So this process, it was like invented in the 1950s or something like that. And it wasn't too popular until, you know, recently, all of a sudden, all these companies are making these and whatnot. So all these hobbyists want this machine to, you know, help restore all the parts. Because cleaning and restoring parts is like the biggest pain in the butt when you're working on a bike.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm like, you know what? I'm not buying this machine. I don't need it. And then I had a long drive home and I'm like thinking in my head, I'm like, I bet you I could build one, you know? And so I started brainstorming and I started looking at patents to make sure there was no patents out there on what I was trying to do. And ultimately I came up with a machine and I videotaped how I did it, put a parts list together, and I put a set of plans together so that people can buy the plans and build it themselves. So, and I sell those for $69.99. I have a $149 option and a $199 option, all different tiers of what kind of content they get and what kind of machine you want to build and whatnot. So those plans alone sell great all over the world and makes up about $2,700 a month of the $4,200 of video sales. So it's a large chunk of just that portion of income.
Oh, interesting. This is no longer plans on how to fix the bike. This is plans on how to build your own vapor blaster.
Yes. You know, tons of motorcycle guys use it, car guys. You know, it's beneficial for a lot of different industries, actually.
Okay. This is like reminiscent of like Russell Brunson in his books. He always talks about, you know, his early days of internet marketing, like trying to sell plans on how to build a potato gun or something. So this sounds similar to that.
Yeah. And I mean, like I said, the cheapest machine is $3,000-$4,000, and you can get up to $8,000 with all the bells and whistles. And I have plans that show you how to get all those features for a lot less money, and it's not that hard to build.
Okay. For someone who's less handy than you are, like myself, it sounds a little intimidating, but I'm just going to weld together this vapor blaster thing. But
well, yeah, there's no welding. You just need a drill and, you know, basic hand tools. And, you know, I go through all the electrical on it and everything, how to connect each wire in the control box and everything. I mean, it's 10 plus hours of video. I mean, step by step, you know?
All right. It's like Lego for grownups.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So the plans are selling great and everything. And then as time went on, someone mentioned, hey, you should try this blast gun from so-and-so company. It speeds up the process about 2 times. And I'm like, oh yeah, great. Cause you know, that's the hardest thing. You don't want to stand in front of this thing for 8 hours and process your parts. If you can do it in 4 hours, that'd be great, right? So, you know, I bought this gun and I actually did a video review on it and I recommended it to tons of people and it was awesome, right? But as time went on, I started getting emails from people saying, hey, I can't contact this company. Where do I buy it? They don't have a website. And then the lead time was always 6 to 8 weeks or whatever. So the company wasn't really doing a good job of fulfilling the demand. And I also asked the owner, hey, will you allow me to distribute this product for you? And I can earn a little bit of money or whatever. And he's like, oh, let me think about it. And he never got back to me. So then I'm like, well, why don't I just design my own gun and sell it? So that's what I did. Basically, I started designing it in CAD. And then once I got to a decent design, I bought a 3D printer off Amazon for $200. And I was able to 3D print the actual parts and throw it in the machine and test it. And I got to a design that worked really well and got some quotes from local machine shops of how much this thing would kind of cost. And then I started a YouTube video of showing my audience, like, hey, I have this design. Here's how much it would roughly cost. Who wants one? And it sparked the conversation.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and then a couple iterations later and whatnot, I try to address all the questions that people had or all the features that it wanted, people wanted. And I put it up on pre-order and basically said, hey, this is a go if I get X amount of pre-orders.
How many were you looking for?
So I told the audience, hey, I'm going to order a batch of 50. And I told them, hey, I need like 30.
You want to have 30 of them spoken for before committing to this production run?
Yeah, because it was like $8,000 worth of inventory that I'm going to have to purchase. Yeah, yeah. Right? So, and in my head, I'm like, you know what? If I get 10, 15, it's a go. You know, I...
I want to do this thing. Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, I went ahead and ordered it. And then the pre-orders kept creeping up. And I actually sold all the pre-orders prior to ever receiving the product from the vendors. They were all spoken for before I even had to pay the bill to the vendors. Which
okay.
Awesome.
And this wasn't Kickstarter or anything. This was just kind of through your own audience, your own platform.
Right. I did. Gumroad had the option to pre-order a product.
Okay.
So, and what that means is that the customer inputs the credit card data, it gets checked, verified. So that way, when you release the product, all the funds come in. That worked out great. So, you know, those sold out. And then the next batch, I'm like, all right, I'm going all in. And I order batches in like 160 pieces now, just to have enough and get the volume discounts.
Okay, so no longer 3D printing these things, but going to the local machine shop and saying, I need 150, I need 160 of these.
Yeah, I mean, the 3D printed parts were just for to verify on my end. I did not ship any 3D printed parts. In fact, they will fail. I have.
Well, that I was like, kind of impressed that it was like it's going to hold up to this high pressure
paper.
Oh,
no. I mean, I have exploded them. They wore out. I mean, 3D printing, you know, I use it at work all the time. It's just to verify a concept. And in some cases, it can be a functional part where there's no stresses and whatever. But in this environment, you actually need metal parts. It's funny because some people actually asked, hey, can you just sell me a 3D printed part? I'm like, no, dude, it's not going to last. You'd be wasting your money. And in fact, there are some people out there, some competition, if you will, that sell 3D printed guns and they hold up for a while, but it's nothing that's going to last you a long time.
Okay. Yeah. So the price point on this is $250 for this like gun nozzle looking thing. That's obviously the technical term.
Yeah. Yeah. So I sell it for $250.
Okay. Was the same price for pre-order or was it like, you know, get in early and get a discount?
No, it was $250 from the start. Yeah.
Okay. So people are committed to this. They, you know, they've been following you for a long time. They love what you're up to, and they say, "Yes, I'm going to commit, even though this thing doesn't exist yet. I trust Matt. I have looked at it. You know, I've watched him use his little prototype, and I'm going to go for it." So you go through, you collect the pre-orders. This just is like a Gumroad sales page, and go to the machine shop, get these things manufactured, start sending them out. What happens after that?
The next batch that was of 160. You know, I would say in March, oh man, I was fulfilling like 20, 30 orders, no, like 12 orders a day, just nonstop. And I sold a ton in March, April. And then after that, you know, things kind of became steady and I began selling, you know, 30, 40 a month or whatever. And then that allowed me to project further demand because it does take 6 to 8 weeks to have the stuff manufactured. So that it's always hard to gauge, but now I just try to order it way in advance. Like I don't want to be out of stock because that's lost dollars, you know?
Okay. Are you warehousing this stuff in your garage? It looks like the pieces themselves are relatively small.
Yeah. So I have a wire rack that I bought from Home Depot. It's on wheels and it's like, 18 inch deep by 6 foot wide or whatever. And it's four shelves and it houses everything from a shipping material all the way to the product. So it doesn't take up a whole lot of space, to be honest, which is awesome.
Yeah, you're doing your own fulfillment center at this point. Talk to me about the shipping side of things. I guess you can schedule like UPS to come pick up at your house, but it's like, man, all like the packaging and all of the, especially you're doing international, so you sent these to a couple dozen different countries. Like all that stuff has got to be a challenge to navigate.
Yes, definitely. And you know what? I think shipping this thing was more difficult than actually designing it, to be honest. I mean, it's just a huge pain in the butt. So in the beginning, I started using USPS, the United States Postal Service. And for domestic, it's fine. It's 2 to 3 days anywhere at a flat rate. No issues there. But internationally, I chose it to begin with because they had flat rate as well, and they were the lowest price. But this also happened with COVID, and it was taking up to 2 months to deliver to the UK or Australia or whatever.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, they kept saying COVID, you know, whatever. And that may be the case, but that's not fair to me or the customers, you know, because they kept emailing me, hey, where is it? And, you know, I don't know if any of you have ever tried to go to the post office with a tracking number and asking questions of where your package is. You're not going to get anywhere, you know? So I was like, okay, I got to look into something else. So I set up an account with DHL, and, you know, again, the learning curve of filling out customs paperwork and all this stuff for international. But I got through that, and I set up my website with a plugin to calculate live rates for customers. So that way, when they check out and I get the order, and then I go to DHL to fill out the shipping label, everything's good.
And do you remember what plugin that was, in case other people want to do the same thing?
I think it's ElexTech or something. E-L-E-X. I think Elex is the DHL plugin. And actually, the DHL representative recommended that one to me.
Okay.
And it's pricey. It's like 70, 80 bucks or whatever. And but man, it's awesome. And what's nice is with the post office, USPS, I drive to the post office and drop off all the packages. I guess I could schedule pickups, but it's nearby. DHL comes straight to my house and they pick up off my doorstep. So all I got to do is throw the package in front and boom, they pick it up and it's done. And it's amazing how fast it is. It gets from Chicago to the UK in 3 days, Australia like a week or two. I mean, it's just super fast.
Wow. That's pretty cool. Sometimes stuff gets lost in the mail and you're like, I don't know. It's in God's hands now. I don't know where it is.
Exactly. But fortunately, I haven't really, I think, you know, actually, there was a package that was out there for 2 months, and the guy's like, dude, the customer's like, where is it at? I'm like, all right, I'll send you another one. I got DHL now. And guess what? The DHL package and the post office package came at the same day. So I lost out on a couple bucks there, but you know, whatever. So it's a learning process, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's all a learning process. I love that. And that's a great reminder to let you know about our sponsor, Skillshare. The online learning community is offering Side Hustle Show listeners a 1 month free trial so you can make 2022 a year of new learning, growth, and connection through creativity with online classes from Skillshare. There's a huge library of on-demand expert taught classes on Skillshare on topics like social media, video production, copywriting, freelancing, productivity, and tons more. For example, Matt's been talking about his journey to 100,000 subscribers on YouTube and the income streams that audience has allowed him to build. If you want to explore building or growing your own channel this year, you might like the top-rated Skillshare original class, YouTube Success, Script, Shoot, and Edit with MKBHD, taught by Marquez Brownlee. Whether you're a dabbler or a pro, a hobbyist or a master, you're creative. That's why Skillshare has classes for every skill level. With short lessons, hands-on projects, and classes designed for real life, you can tap into the creativity that we all have inside. Skillshare helps you move your creative journey forward without putting life on hold. You'll create real projects and get the support of fellow creatives so you can accomplish real growth. I want to invite you to explore your creativity at skillshare.com/sidehustle, where Side Hustle Show listeners get a 1 month free trial. That's 1 month free at skillshare.com/sidehustle. Is there a target, I guess, gross margin that you're shooting for on these physical product sales?
Yeah. So how I came up with the 250 number is the one gun that I told you was from so-and-so company that was pretty good. I think his cost about 180, but you couldn't get it, right? And I made some improvements that I thought were worth paying for. And then early on in the design of the part, like one of the first couple iterations, I had It's made of seven parts, okay? I think I had four or five custom parts that would need to be machined, and though that drives up cost, right?
Yeah.
And as time went on, I'm like, you know what? I can do this off the shelf. I can get that one off the shelf and this one, or I can simplify it. So the cost came down as the design iterations went on, but I kept that 250 price the same, and my cost went down. So the margin increased, if you will. So I just left it.
Okay. And it typically goes down like the bigger order you place too, right?
Exactly. So, you know, when I get these priced out, I'm like, hey, what are my price breaks? There's a price break at 50, 100, 150, you know, whatever. At some point it plateaus off, right? So I'm comfortable with batches of 160. It lasts 4 to 5 months here in inventory. So that's what I've been doing.
Are you selling through Amazon or any other third-party platforms, or just kind of through your own website?
Yeah, just on my website. I paid a guy, a developer on Upwork, to set up WooCommerce on my site. I just had too much going on at the time to do it myself. I actually tried doing it myself, and I think I clicked one wrong button and everything went to hell. And then I'm like, all right, you know what? I got to focus on other things. So I paid, I think, $100 or something for a guy to clean it all up and make it nice. Well worth the money, honestly. So
yeah, I was going to ask if it was still through Gumroad, because it's primarily known for digital products. So it's got to be WooCommerce for the shipping capabilities and for the physical side of things.
Yeah. So in the beginning, the first pre-order of 50, I did through Gumroad. And what was super inconvenient at the time is I had to copy and paste all the shipping info from there to, say, USPS site. So doing 50 packages like that, it was so time consuming. I think now they have some kind of integration with ShipStation or some other shipping platform where you can take your orders and put it on a different platform where you can generate labels very quickly just by the click of the button. But I don't think that was available at the time. WooCommerce just makes it easy. I mean, I generate labels with just a couple clicks, and you know, it's so much faster.
Okay. Did you ever give any thought? Well, I guess you tried to, like, can I just be a distributor for this thing that already exists? Like, it's good enough. But any thought to, you know, slapping your brand on products that already exist and say, look, I got this existing audience, especially the stuff that you're already selling as an affiliate. You know, maybe it makes sense to like bring that in-house instead of taking a 4% affiliate commission. Like, maybe I could get 10, 20% margin as a wholesale distributor.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I've given that some thought. My brother actually has an e-commerce store where he sells on eBay, and his basement is just full of product. I mean, I don't know if I want to, pack that much stuff. And there has to be a certain percentage to shoot for. I mean, I don't think I would do it. You know, it's got to be 10, 20% or whatever. Otherwise, you know, I'm not interested, you know.
What was the markup again on the blast gun?
Yeah, so it's $100 to make and $250 price.
Okay. All right, I can't do math, but that's like, you know, almost a 3x. Yeah, okay. So plenty of margin to play with there versus, especially if you're having to commit to pre-buying a bunch of inventory. Okay, yeah, there's other considerations on the physical product side. Are you going to expand the catalog? What's coming down the pipeline here?
Yeah, so I have three sizes available right now, meaning to match up what size compressor people have, how much air available they have. So I'm coming out with a fourth size, and it's geared towards people with smaller compressors. And again, I did a video. I said, hey, who would be interested in such a size? And a lot of people said, yeah, I'm up for it. So I came up with a prototype, tested it, did a demo, a YouTube demo on it. And I said, hey, if you guys want this, get on a wait list. And what I try to stress with the wait list is like, hey, I'm doing this in a small batch. Get on the wait list and you'll get first dibs at the inventory that comes in, because it sold out last time. So I try to get some urgency going here, right? So this new size comes out mid-February is when I'll have parts. And I got a wait list of 40, 50 people or whatever. So yeah, ultimately that's going to help me sell more guns per month. And also what I'm trying to do is come up with some different nozzles to get different spray patterns. And then the nozzles are made out of different materials for different wear life. So I'm going to try to expand a little bit on that again to sell more guns per month.
Okay. So now you've got this expanding physical product line. You've got still the digital plans on how to fix motorcycle problems. You got the digital plans on how to build your own vapor blaster. I wanted to circle back on those for a second because you mentioned having three or four different pricing tiers there. Could you explain what those are, what people get at the different levels?
Sure. So it starts at $69, and that's for a machine that has like a base model, if you will. It doesn't have a lot of features. It's a simplified machine. And then for $99, you get a more advanced featured machine. And the feature here is it's called open versus closed loop. And the open loop you have to have hooked up to a garden hose. And the closed loop is self-contained. And it has more automation features built into it. So those are the two differences there between $69 and $99. When you go to $149, I actually built a cabinet out of plywood and I made it waterproof. And that's the plans for $149 because it's much larger. And just so you know, my plans are for people to take a dry blast cabinet that you buy new or used, which is made out of steel or plastic or stainless steel or whatever, and you have to convert it. Now, these wood plans, it's both a wet and dry blast cabinet, and you cut it out of 5 sheets of plywood. And you screw it all together, glue it up, put some waterproofing product in it, and you got a nice cabinet that's built out of wood. It's hilarious.
Okay. And the same thing, like the $199 is the top end there?
So the $199 is a bundle where you get the wood cabinet plans and also the other plans for converting a steel one. That way they can make the decision to do whatever they want. They get all the information. There's just tons of different ideas as far as building one goes.
Okay. I like this, you know, price discrimination. And discrimination is a dirty word, but like this price discrimination is a really common strategy to like let people kind of self-select in a way, like pay for what they want. And, you know, somebody wants the, like you said, somebody wants the base model. Here it is. Somebody wants the higher end thing. You know, they can go for that too. And so I think that's a smart way to do that versus just saying, here's one flat price. But I've seen people do it both ways, you know, make the decision easy for me versus this. So it's like all on kind of one sales page. And I'm imagining like this, you know, the common like horizontally presented pricing menu, you know, good, better, best type of thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And not only that is if you buy a base model machine, I will eventually email you with saying, hey, do you want to upgrade to the better plans for a discount? You know, I try to lure them in for a little off, you know, 10 off, 20 off, whatever it is. And I say, hey, here they are if you want to upgrade. Or maybe the steel one you bought is too small. You want to build a bigger one. Here's a discount on the wood plans. You know, so I try to upsell later on.
Okay. Is that over email based on like, okay, this customer ordered, I guess you're tracking emails through Gumroad or is it a different email marketing system that you have?
No, you can do it right through Gumroad. They call it workflows. So after a customer buys, you can send an email 1 hour after they buy, 3 days, 2 months, whatever you want. And so I drip the content that way, or the emails rather, sorry.
Is there a sales funnel, so to speak, where, you know, somebody watches your YouTube video, you pitch the, you know, motorcycle garage self-repaired cheat sheet, like here's the 10 tools that you need to have. They jump on your email list and then you like slowly tell them what other products they should buy?
Yeah, no, not yet. You know, that's like on my list of things to do and I just never got there. But yeah, I
almost say it in jest because it doesn't sound like you need it.
Yeah, I mean... So here's the thing. I don't have a very general product to pitch to these people because what are the chances that this subscriber or they take this free lead magnet that they'll need a vapor blaster or how to rebuild an engine on this and this and that? Very unlikely. I need a very general product to pitch and for that to work, I think, you know?
Yeah, the general lead magnet, I think, could work, because anybody who's watching you obviously has a motorcycle, they're a do-it-yourselfer, right? So there's like, there's a little bit of audience self-selection there. Like the biggest risk that I see just from an outsider looking in is the reliance on YouTube. It's like, okay, if I could get some of these people off of that ecosystem, should there be an algorithm update? Should there be anything that happens? So at least have the means of communicating with them through another channel, like a fail-safe channel. But it, you know, as terms of a product funnel, you know, maybe that doesn't make as much sense, but at least you have some means of follow-up.
Yeah, I mean, but from a sales funnel standpoint, here's kind of what I do. Let's say I want people to build buy my vapor blaster plans. I have like 40 videos out there on vapor blasting, all kinds of different stuff showing how this machine works, what it can do in various projects. And I always mention, oh, I restored this part in this. And all those videos point to the product page, whether it's on Gumroad or my website, to help, you know, sell the plans.
Yeah, okay.
So that's a funnel in it, in a way. You know?
Yeah, there's a lot of inroads there where people could discover you. Are you doing any like website-specific content, or is it primarily YouTube, like blog posts type of stuff?
Yeah, I do blog posts. Not too many, but when I feel I need to do it to explain something, I will. Like, so yes, I do.
What's a typical day in the life at this point? I know you've still got the day job. You've got, I think you had 3 kids last time we spoke. So there's like the family side of things.
That's up to 4 now.
Okay, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, as far as time spent, I'm an early bird. So I usually wake up 5 in the morning and I'll take care of some emails and whatever in the morning, or I'll work on video editing. I don't come out here too late at night anymore, because I mean, man, I'm so tired by the end of the day, you know, with 4 kids and, you know, a million dishes to do and stuff. But yeah, I would say I spend about 5 to 7 hours a week on this business.
Wow. You got it scaled to a point where it doesn't require that much hands-on time. Everything is really leveraged, where it's like, it takes the same effort to create a video that, you know, 10 people watch, or one that 10,000 people watch. So there's some interesting leverage, like you said, built over the course of the last 10 years, but happy to see where it has gotten you at this point. With the income that the business is producing today and where you might project it to go following this similar trajectory over the last 5-6 years, any plans to take this full time?
Yeah. So, you know, my wife's in school right now. She's going... I mean, yes, I would love to do this full time, right? And I actually, years ago, I told myself, if I ever get to this income level, which is now more than my day job, by the way, I said, I'm quitting, you know, I'm quitting. But we have been in stash mode. I'm just stashing so much for whatever, a rainy day or a new house or whatever. It's kind of nice to just keep that growing for the time being, at least. Now my wife's in school, so we gotta, you know, we're paying our way through that. She'll be done in 2 or 3 years. She'll be able to work full time. All the kids will be in school full time. Maybe that'll be the time to just say, hey, I'm good.
You know? All right. We gotta do what works for you. I'm excited for you, because not everybody has that optionality. And I think that's kind of maybe the biggest benefit of building the side hustle, is like all of a sudden, if you have, you know, 3 bad meetings at work, whatever, you know, some people have their rules, you know, 5 bad days, okay, count them down, and then I'm out of here. It's nice to have that freedom and flexibility there. Matt, this has been awesome. HowToMotorcycleRepair.com. Check him out over there. We'll link up his YouTube channel as well. It's Matthew MC Repair is the channel name or username over there. We'll link that up. Really appreciate you joining me again, sharing the ins and outs of just kind of the... Well, you know, the different directions that things can go once you're in motion. I think that's probably the biggest takeaway for me. The different, you know, you've done an excellent job of working in public and kind of following these different rabbit trails where they lead you, and having the audience support you along the way. Let's wrap this thing up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation 2022 edition, and then we'll take a trip down memory lane and revisit the advice from the first couple episodes.
All right. So I would recommend people to just be involved in their space and just wait for opportunities. If you asked me what vapor blasting was a couple years ago, I had no idea what it was. None. And here I am today where I saw an opportunity to create plans how to build it, build this physical product. I didn't know what any of this stuff was a couple years ago. So just be involved in your space. When people are asking you for ways to solve their problem, that's a product idea right there.
Yeah, I love that. So much more difficult if you're coming at this from the niche or product ambivalence stage. You know, if you're just looking at Jungle Scout, trying to research something like, well, what's selling really well? It's like, okay, yeah, for every person like you, there is somebody else who's like neck deep in this space and just like knows and loves it and has been doing it for 10 years, and they're going to have an edge. And by the way, they've been building up this audience by working in public, who's going to support them in their projects, in their endeavors, in their pre-orders. So I really like that call to be involved in your space. 2016 advice. Do you have a guess? Do you have to have a guess to remember what it was?
Was it, if you build it, they will come?
That was 2019. That was 2019. Oh, okay. So that was very good. That was kind of the opportunities will show up.
I know
up.
What it was.
Go ahead.
The expert in anything was once a beginner.
Oh my goodness. How did you remember that? But yes, you are 100% correct. An expert in anything was once a beginner. One of my favorite bits of advice, something really important to remember, kind of the corollary to John Acuff's, like, you know, don't compare your beginning to somebody else's middle, right? It's just, everybody got to start somewhere. Every all-star was once a rookie. Every expert was once a beginner. Matt, really appreciate you joining me. Thanks for sharing your insight once again. Number three on the show. We'll link up his previous episodes as well. Thanks to Rank IQ and Skillshare for sponsoring this week. RankIQ.com is the leading keyword research and AI content creation tool built for bloggers like you. Give it a try today at RankIQ.com so you can focus your energy and attention creating content that is actually going to get traffic. And then to level up your skills in the areas that matter most, check out Skillshare.com/sidehustle for a free trial of premium membership. That is it for me. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, let's go out there and make something happen, and I'll catch you in the next edition of The Side Hustle Show. Hustle on.